Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways. And for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
So good morning, good afternoon, good day, good evening to you all from wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020. And this is Martial and Healing Arts. And I would love to welcome our guest, Te Arahi, I believe that's pronounced. So you're most welcome in this space. And his presentation is called The Power of the Indigenous Karakia, if that's correct, yeah?
Yep.
So a little bit about our presenter. So I believe you're in New Zealand at the moment. Yeah, in an early
evening. Yes, I am.
Yeah. And what I would like to say about you is that it seems like you've got your hands in multiple various forms. So you work as a guide in social services with young people or young men who are finding their true path. You also work as a marriage and funeral celebrant. You also work as a cultural consultant for the corporate companies in New Zealand, yeah? So it looks like there's a lovely mixture of different roles in your life, but they all have something in common, and that is the name or the word Karakia, as I'm understanding it, yeah? Which is the invocation, or would it be something like a prayer similar to that? So
yes, totally.
Lovely, beautiful. So I would like you to maybe open up the space with this. I'm quite new to this, so I'm very excited about this, and that's why I love the conference, to be coming across very new things. So I am pretty much to Ahari, I'm giving you the space.
To take us through,
and we are all yours for now.
All right. Kia ora, Miriam. Like, whānau means family. You're going to hear me switching from, I'll be throwing a lot of Māori words in there. And so I'll explain what most of those words are. And I guess if we go back to what the subject of our kōrero or our talk about today is around karakia, I think karakia, yes, it's prayer, but what is prayer? It's really around connection. And the space that I'm talking around particularly is the Māori theology, I guess, of what that connection looks like through karakia or through invocation of connection to, I guess, what we'd call the unseen is probably the easiest way to go about doing it, whānau. So, look, I have to be honest. Yes, Miriam, you were right. I do all of those things. I work in the social services. We get funded, our organisation, through the youth sector, and I work with young men aged between 12 to 18. Mm-hmm. And they've done a crime, and generally it's not too bad. Basically, we have a contract where I hang out with these young guys one-on-one for work hours during the day. Mm-hmm. And it is about, when they come up in front of the judge, 6 weeks later, when they go back in front of the judge after working with our team, they want to see, one, that they haven't reoffended, two, that they're into something positive, and three, that they've engaged in the program. So to put this into context for you, whānau, like I said, whānau means family, and I mean in a global family. We are all family as far as I'm concerned, no matter where we are in the different places in the world. And so to put that into context, 15% of the population in New Zealand identify themselves as being of Māori descent, and I'm going to go into my particular whakapapa or ancestry shortly, but this is a figure that is important that you know. So 15% of New Zealand's population identify as being Māori or of Māori descent, yet I think it's currently in male prisons around about 55% of our jail population are Māori, and in female jails it's even higher. So you can see why the government feels that it's important to invest money in the social services sector in the sorts of mahi or work that that I'm involved with, because it's about turning those stats around, I guess. And constantly on that, you know, I just always fall back to what would our ancestors, and I'm talking about Māori, you know, 90% of the young guys that I deal with at the moment. And for those of you that are out there wondering, what about wahine or girls? We do that too. But I just work with men on my side or boys on my side. And a lot of it's just safety reasons, but we have wahine that work on that side as well. So why is that important? And I always think back to how our ancestors would have liked for us to live. And I think about my Māori ancestors, and they would want us just to be in, you know, 2020, to be thriving in this modern world. And, you know, when you got a stat where you're 15% of the population and nearly 60% of that population make up the jails, then that's not disparate. And that's just one indicator. That's just one, you know, KPI of how we are doing as an Indigenous race. And most of you are probably aware that across the world, it's pretty much the same for most Indigenous peoples. And so when we work in the social services space, that is what I'm all about in there, or what we're all about. And but having said that, it's not a doom and gloom. I really enjoy my day. And the young guys that I'm involved with, you know, it's about us enjoying our day together and having fun. I do a lot of things out in nature with them. If I can take you for a little bit of a walk, I'm in my house now. It's 6:15 in the evening here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And I'm just going to quickly just walk you around. So I've got a little boat there. It's undercover at the moment. You can see it there. And the first thing I do when I have these young guys is I take them out on a boat, because it's about taking them out into the natural world. And you'll hear me talk about this a lot more over the next hour. Take them out on the sea. It's obviously only a little boat, but what's great about it is it kind of forces them to listen, because they can't go out and be all silly, because you get a wave on the beam of the boat, and you know, you can get knocked around a bit. So one, they're listening. Two, they're in an environment where they need to be careful, and so that just allows us to help build ourselves. You know, they have fun on that first day. They come back the second day. And by the third day, we're starting to build a relationship. Beautiful. So, yeah, so that's kind of, and then we just go from there. Yeah, so that's kind of the social services in a real little nutshell. The other kōrero things that I've got on there around being a marriage celebrant, you know, my line, it was one of those things I never thought I'd end up doing, being a marriage celebrant, as we all go on this journey of life. Like, my career was as a commercial fisherman. And then I just got to that age in life, had a marriage breakup, and started to question what I really was all about and what I wanted to do with my life. And to cut a long story short, I was very privileged I made a decision, really, but I made a decision to embrace my Māori tanga. And because I grew up in New Zealand in the 1970s, and we weren't really, New Zealand in the 1970s wasn't about, the messages I heard at school were like, waste of time learning that Māori stuff. You know, we live in what we call a Pākehā or a non-Māori word world now. You need to learn a skill and become a builder or something like that. Now, if you had said to me back then, in 1980, in 1982 in New Zealand, the first Kōhanga Reo started, which is a total immersion Māori language kindergarten. And then that was a landmark decision, because in New Zealand 2020, it's just an incredible switch to what New Zealand was like when I was, like I say, growing up in the 80s there. So it's a very different world that we live in now, and certainly an empowering world, because as we all know, language is a cornerstone of strength and identity. So you know, I came back from how I got into that. Grew up in rural Northland and the north of New Zealand. When I left school, couldn't speak a word of te reo Māori. Went back to, I became a fisherman, like I said. I also was a bit of a, I loved playing rugby union. There's a lot of Kiwi guys do. It's our sport of choice here. It was when I was young. And so I found myself playing rugby over in Australia. And then I always had a dream of playing for my province up home, and came home to try and achieve that dream. And basically in the first month I was home, I broke my leg really, really badly. And what happened then, I just found myself, you know, rural Northland's not a lot to do in a lot of ways. And so I was like, man, I've got a sleeping in all day. And I just made that decision to really, I've got to do something. And so there was a course running at the time up there, and basically I signed up on this course, and what essentially that did for me is what I call, I opened the greenstone door for me. And the greenstone door, I mean, is a ponamu, or greenstone is a sort of, it's the New Zealand version of what diamonds are. And so it opened that door of self-identity in terms of myself as being Māori. And to cut a long story short, I just found myself on a journey over a year or so. And then really, I guess it had an effect on me where it felt like my shoulders were pulled back. I just walked a bit taller, and I just felt a bit better about who I was. And to be honest, you know, my life since then, this is over 20 years ago now, my life since then has morphed into ways that if I hadn't taken that step, you know, it really did save my life in a, not a physical way, but certainly in a life value and quality and kind of meaningful sort of a way. So it was quite cool. So what I'd like to do, I know I'm just going to take you on a bit of a journey with me. over the next half an hour or so. So the first, to give you a bit of a context, I'm inside my house now. We will be doing a few karakia on that, but the first thing I really want to explain to you is that I'm of mixed ancestry, as a lot of New Zealanders are. So on my dad's side, that is my Māori side, my taha Māori. And then on my mum's side, that is my Pākehā side, or non-Māori side. So I'm going to give you a quick little, and just show you here if you can kind of see that.
Yeah, this picture of your family, yeah.
Yeah, that's my mum. This was about in the 1970s, and that's that's my dad on the right there. So I've just shown you that to really get across to you the mixed blood that makes up me.
Yep.
And part of that, of course, of coming up Northland, I'm going to show you another, push on to another photo here. Can you see that one on the wall there?
Yeah, I can see the carriage and horses. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Sort of black and white, so brownish.
Yeah, so that gentleman there, that's actually my grandfather. That's my mum's dad. And this would have been about 1920s,
right,
when they those are kauri trees, and they used to mill those trees and take them worldwide for building and that sort of thing over there. So it was a global industry. So that was back in those days. And so just to put it into context, so that's sort of my mum's family up home in the Hokianga were very early pioneer types.
Right.
And so this gives you a little bit of a context of what New Zealand was like in those early ones. I'm just going to show you another photo now. I don't know if you can see. I'll just come outside where the light's a little bit better. I'm going to show you another photo here. Can you see that one there?
A little bit. Yeah. I can see someone with the hands up.
That's right. So this is my great, 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 great grandfather. This was painted in 1822 by an Englishman called Augustus Earle. And so back in those times, the whaling industry was, global industry was really what was driving the economy in New Zealand, 1820s. Māori still kind of ruled the run of the country. And so Pākehā that came in and up in the Bay of Islands where that was taken was a big stopover port for them. Began my tupuna there, Te Whareumu, he was really responsible for supplying the ships with fresh meat and all of that kind of thing. So I just really wanted to quickly show you those two photos as an examples of, You know, on one side, you've got that heavy taha Māori side of my dad's ancestry. And then on the other side, you've got my mum's ancestry, which is really around that colonial. My mum's name was Gawitha, which is a Welsh, even though she was born in New Zealand, and her dad, generation before that would have been were first immigrants to New Zealand. So just to give you a quick context,
yeah,
it is, because it, you know, there's a couple of messages in that, and I think one of them is really around, you know, in terms of te reo, and going back to what I was saying before, there's such a resurgence of what language is all about. New Zealand prides itself on being embracing that culturalism. We've been on a journey right from colonization right through until now, and that journey keeps on evolving. And I think what I'm getting at there is there's the ownership now, or the responsibility, and also the invitation for all cultures and all races to learn te reo Māori and to uphold our cultural identity as New Zealanders. So so I think that's quite cool. And we're going to go for a little walk out the back, but I think I just want to finish with this. This is my ancestry. In terms of the first Māori that discovered Aotearoa was a gentleman, according to our kōrero, our talk up north, called Kupe. And he's the Hokianga is kind of famous because it's the last place where he resided. So the Hokianga is the little place where I'm from. And I think in terms of wrapping up my ancestry, my whakapapa lineage, I'd just like to share this with you. Ko kupe ki machu ki mākoro, ka mai o wāro, ka nuku tawhiti ki ngara nui, ki ngara rō, ka ngara pai whenua, ka tamanui e tērā, ka kari aiti ki puhi moana ariki ki tahau hangiangi. Ko tahau hangiangi ka moe a toro ngāre ngā pauiroa. Ka puta kō hini a maru. Ko hini a maru ka moe a te kōpiru, ka puta kō hauhaua. Ki rei uera, ki waipiha ngarangi, ki pērā. Ka puta kō te uwhinga, ka moe a ki te huru. Ko te huru ka moe a hautai, ko hautai te ari ki taiparu a Ngāti Manu ki kōrera areka. Ka puta kō te arahi ki te whariumu. Ko te whariumu ka moe a moihuri, ko moihuri te tamahini o mohi tāwhai nā waima, ka puta raua ko kōhu. Ko kōhu ka moe a te tāngata Pākehā tuatahi, ko Joseph Bryars nā Ingarangi, ka puta raua ko Charles Bryars. Ko Charles Bryars ka moe a Mary Ann Main, ka puta raua ko Matthew Bryars. Ko Matthew Bryars ka moe a Dolly Dick, ka puta raua ko Bill Bryars. Ko Bill Bryars ka moe a Mary Ann Mason nā Wamamaku, Gwitha Mason nā Wamamaku, ka puta raua ko au. A kua moe au e te wahine tuatahi, Stephanie Norton nā Whangarei, ka puta a Maua ki Georgia Bryars, ki Taku Tamahine, he wahine toa, he wahine a Tāhuia, ko moe au te wahine tuarua, ko Ann Benson nā Sweden, ka puta a Maua ko te arai Bjorn Bryars, he tāngata toa, he ra tamaiti rangataihi haumārie, ki Taku Tamaiti tērā, kua otu te te whakapapa. So whānau, I know you wouldn't have understood a word of what I said there, but basically there was a direct lineage, recited my ancestral line from Kupe, the first Māori to discover Aotearoa, directly down to me. And I think that is one of the, you know, I feel very privileged to be able to do that, but also in that Indigenous context, it's important to keep us grounded to who we are. And not just in an Indigenous context, I think the message that I'm really inviting to all of you is, and this is with my cultural consultancy hat on, is we all have whakapapa, we all have ancestry, and I really encourage all of you to go into that, you know, search what you can, find what you can, because this belief in the Western world, and certainly this is kind of what it's like in New Zealand, we hear a lot of, oh, you Māori are so lucky to have that spiritual connection or that tracing your whakapapa, even though, and what they're really getting at is it's part of our cultural practices But what I'm saying to you is I invite you all to create your own cultural practice, and knowing your whakapapa as far back as you can is a real strengthening of your identity, and not just for you, but for your children and those others that come after you, because that's what that's one of the gifts that you can leave life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely, thank you. No, that's a really good message there, important message.
Yeah. So I'm going to take you on a little bit of a walk outside my backyard now, Maru.
Mm-hmm.
Because
like we're invading your privacy. You're sharing your family space with us. Thank you.
The world is in my house. So I'm just going to come out my back gate. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to quickly, in a minute, I'm going to scan around and I'll just talk just so that you know. A lot of the things that you kind of wouldn't recognize, but it's important to know these facts. So just hear my voice and just take in what's around you. So I'm just outside my back fence. So what I'm standing on right now before I show you is it's Māori reserve land. So basically, through the colonization process, Māori, we lost a lot of our natural resources and land. We've been going through the settlement processes in the last few years. And where I'm fortunate enough to have my house is a Māori reserve land in the back here. So my house is privately owned. I own that, but step outside my backyard, which I've just come. You'll see in a minute when I pan around, this is all Māori reserve land. And so in other words, it doesn't belong to any individual. It belongs to the local tribe here. And so I'm just going to just quickly scan around, and then I'm going to go for a little bit of a walk a little bit later on, because I just want to show you something over there as well. So I'm just going to talk you around, okay? Mm-hmm. So if you're looking over there, I'm in Tauranga, which is the East Coast Festival. Can you still hear me, Miriam?
I can still hear you. When you point your laptop away from you, you can just raise your voice up a little bit.
Can you still hear me there?
Yep.
Okay. So if you're looking over that side, so Tauranga, where I live, is on the east coast of the North Island of New Zealand. And I live in Tauranga, which is the fourth biggest city in New Zealand. And where I'm pointing right now, that building there where you can see the fence, can you still hear me okay?
Yes, it's all good, thanks.
Yeah, that is Whareroa Marae, which is one of Tauranga's oldest marae. Now think of about a marae as a cross between a community hall and a church, with its own set of sanctity and its own set of rules and tikanga. They're our place where we congregate from time to time. Now I'm just going to bring you back to me. To give you an example, one of the things that marae are most used for in this modern world is for tangi. So in our belief system as Māori, when you pass away, you don't go into a morgue, you go to a marae. And your body lies in state on the marae for 3 days. And what the good thing about that is it really allows time for people to grieve and connect with their loved one. So that when that person leaves that space and goes to what we call te reinga, our own pathway up into the heavens, it's kind of like, yes, the people, the whānau pani or the bereaved family have had time to process their grief, collectively share their grief, and the body gets to go on its pathway to te reinga. Now, I'm not going to go into that into too much detail, because that's a very sacred subject that it's probably a better one-on-one kōrero, but I'm just sharing with you that is one of the most common uses for marae now. It has its own set of tikanga, which is the way things are done in sacred space. So like, for example, I wouldn't go over there now and walk around inside there, because it's just kind of not appropriate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how are we going for time, Miriam?
We've got about, let's say, we can have about another 20 minutes.
Okay.
And then we can go into some questions if they pop up. So you're getting really nice support in the chat box, though. People are connecting to the subject, so it's good. So, yeah, carry on.
Okay. All right, cool. So What I'm going to do is I was going to walk right down to where the water's edge, because just out the back of my yard is kind of a beach, but it'll take me about 5 minutes to get over there. But I think what I'd rather do is I'll probably just stay here. I'm right in the middle of the field, but I'll just hold it up again. So that's Wairoa Marae. If you look right there, even though it appears it's a long way away, that's the actual inner harbour of Tauranga. Mm-hmm. The tide's out, which you can see a little bit of a beach there. And then if you go around to that building there, that is one of the local tribes here is Ngai Te Rangi, and that is the Ngai Te Rangi Social Services building. So that's not where I work in the social services, but it does give you a context of the fact that through our settlement processes now, you know, the government acknowledging all the wrongs that happened in the mid-1800s, there's processes set up now where lands and monies are being returned to tribes. And so that building there, for Ngai Te Rangi descendants, they spend it on programs around the well-being for their old people and for their young people. So old people is kuia and kaumātua, and young people is rangatahi. And just as a little note there, right in the middle there, that's a tennis court. Mm-hmm. So New Zealand in the 1970s, there were a lot of these reserves around where there'd often be a marae, and right next to the marae was a rugby field, and then there'd be attached to it tennis courts in the 1970s. So I put that net up myself. I moved into this house about 2 years ago, and I call it my private court because me and there's a few other young kids here get on there from time to time, but I like being able to go and have a bit of a hit on the court, and then middle of summer when the tide's right, you can go and jump in the tide, although... To be fair, Miriam, it's just going into our spring and I won't be jumping into the tide today.
You're right there in the nature. It's pretty amazing though.
Yeah, it is. Look, and that's kind of the whole point of what I'm trying to get across, and why I went outside my house to do my whakapapa is to be outside, because you're not limited by the roof, and it just makes that connection a lot stronger. Look, I know we're getting through our time pretty quickly anyway, so I think I'll just there's a couple of more things that I wanted to go into, and I really wanted to tell you around in terms of a karakia, in terms of our invocation, a couple of things. So I'm going to share with you a little story. This is our creation story around our Māori theology. So we have our own version of our creator, Io Matua Kore, was our creator. I'm not going to go into the too much details of how the creation works specifically. I think this is probably not a time and a place to say it on this sort of channel. But to cut a long story short, the world was created in the way that we know and we can see it now. However, Io said to... there was one element, if you think about it, as stratosphere. So you got the star level, and then you got the levels that come down into the world, the sky that you can see above us now. Now, Io had created these layers, and at the above layer was the last layer he called Rangiawatia. And his underneath him is the physical world that we had. Now, he had created this physical world, but what happened was Ranginui, which was the male element, and the masculine element, so still stands above us as our protector and our guide, fell in love with Papatuanuku, the earth element. And so just as those traits of masculinity and as men, we need to be conscious that we are protectors, that we can be the guardians of our loved ones, and particularly our wahine, our woman. And then at the same time, Papatuanuku, the earth mother, is the nurturer for those of us, and certainly our children. As an example of that is the example of food, because we grow food in Papatuanuku, and without food nurtures our bodies so that us as mankind can thrive. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to tell you a quick story. So Rangi and Papa were held together in a really strong embrace, as lovers do. And they had a multitude of children. However, there were 7 main children. But the thing was, these children were kind of like stuck in between them because they had held on to them so tightly. So picture this if you can. this beautiful world that we live in had been created, but the children couldn't see it because of their mum and dad, Rangi and Papa, holding on so tightly together. However, one day as they moved just slightly, a shaft of light came shining in, and the children realized, hey, there's light out there. And they'd sort of had a talk about it and went, man, we want to live in the light. We don't want to live in the dark anymore. And so, to cut a long story short, it was one of them, Tāne Mahuta, who was the one that was able, they decided to separate their parents so that they can walk freely in this beautiful world that we have. And it was Tāne Mahuta that was able to separate his mum and his dad, i.e. so now we have his father Ranganui looking above us, and below us we have Papa Tuanuku, the earth mother, that is constantly there to nurture us. Now, the reason I'm telling you the story is the children went and became the guardians of the natural world that we can see around us. And so I'm going to do a little haka for you that I learned in an island not far from here at Makoya Island. And it was, they have these camps there where they do taiaha. And I see this is a martial art channel, but I'm not really going to go into that too much today, only because I kind of didn't really know what the kōrero was. Oh, you there?
We're here. We've lost your screen for a bit, but we can see you. We can see your back.
Has it come back?
You are. Yeah, I can see you. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I think I've just had a bit of a thing come up that my phone's only on 20%. So I'm just going to I'm going to do something for you out here, and then we'll go inside for our question and answer so we can plug our phone in, okay?
Okay, perfect. Lovely.
All right. So what I'm going to share with you now is this is a haka. It's a think about it as a body movement exercise that really tells the story of the separation of Rangi and Papa, and then the children coming out and becoming those deities. I'll quickly do it for you. I'm not going to do it at 100%.
Are you going to be moving?
Pardon?
Are you going to be moving?
Yep, but my...
So maybe you could move a little bit more away from the camera. So see, we
yes. Yeah, yeah, I am. Yeah.
That is...
I'll be doing that.
Yeah, perfect, yeah.
Yep, and then I'm gonna give you a bit of a kōrero around how those natural entities relate to our natural world.
Okay.
So think about this as an invocation or a karakia to go to those natural elements that are always around us. Pano, pano, haramaite toki, homie, huye, taeki e anak, si, si, nana, tomari, ki arangi nui, me papa tuanuku ka puta matau, ki tue au, pitao maramai. Tāne mahuta atua a te ngā here, tūmā tauenga atua a te ririe. O tāwhiri matea atua o te haue, o tangaroa atua o te moana. Hiya, haha. O ene atu o te mana motuhake ao, tātou tūpuna e hiya, haha. Rongo matane haumi e tiki tiki, rua, hai moko korapupu, ana, ana te
oops.
Rua, ana te rua. I o matua kore, anake, hui.
Give it lost the screen again. Hello. I can see we're still possibly connected, but we have lost Thanks, Natalie. You picked it up right there. The energy is too strong for this technology. Yeah, no, we've lost our presenter to Arahi right now, right after the beautiful outside sequence, which was very powerful. I believe we might be hearing about a little bit more. I know that Ahari was running out of battery. There we go, the virtual world with the real world out there happening at the same time. He was trying to share and to pass his experience right through the movement directly to us. So I would think that he might rejoin us soon. Anyway, I would like to take this opportunity to just simply take in what we've just experienced. For me, this is fantastic. I am really, really humbled to be hearing and experiencing it all on my side. I feel like I have been invited and welcome in a very sort of sacred and quite an intimate and community space by everything what I've heard so far, and where the tradition is a very, very important. So I loved how Tahar is talking from that outside space. There is this direct connection with the nature, standing on the grass, using the movement to connect to the Mother Earth, having all that open space around him, which is then able to help him support his work. So having hands in a couple of very different but connected through the Karakia, different services and serving the community, very important. Well, thank you very much for that. I hope we're gonna have you back soon. I feel actually very quite energized, and there is a grounding in the talk about the community. There is a grounding in what we've just experienced as attendees, as people who are watching this, again watching the sequence from the Maori community. I invite those who are still with us to maybe just take this time and just be with what they've just experienced. If you've been sitting around for the last half an hour, maybe just change the position a little bit. Just go and do something a little bit different to you've been doing until right now. I can see that Arahi might be back with us. He's in a room with us, so we might be seeing him again. Hello.
Hey, Miriam.
Hey, we've lost you a bit, but we have been a little bit reflecting on what we've just seen. So thank you.
Look, I had to come back inside. My phone was fully charged, and for some reason it just chewed through the juice. So
that's all right.
Apologies, everyone, whānau, for the inconvenience and the disruption.
Lovely. Welcome back. I was just saying that I feel quite grounded after what I experienced from you doing outside.
Good. I'm happy that for you.
That open space. So take it from there.
what I was going to show you out there was just that there's two the that story tells the story, yes, of the separation of Rangi and Papa, but what happened after that was their seven main children, they basically became what we call the kaitiaki, or the guardians of those natural elements that we see around us. And I'll go through those. And that haka tells the story about it. So Tāne Mahuta, he's the god of the trees and the forest, so that's him pushing Rangi apart. Tūmātauenga, that one, is the god of mankind and also the god of mankind and also the god of war. And so, because as we all know, mankind, we're quite complex,
And that's the domain of tumatowing. And also when you go into the war, so I know this is part of this is a martial arts channel. So in combat and things like that, you're in that domain of tumatowing. The next one was tawhiri mātia. So they're waving around is like you get blown around by the wind, because tawhiri mātia is the god of weather. Tangaro, that one there, represents kind of like a paddle. And Tangaro is the god of the sea and god of the ocean and or waters. Then from there, you have Rongo Matane, which is the god of cultivated foods. And what I was actually going to do out there was show you my gardens, because it's spring here and I've just planted my gardens for the summer today. There's a young guy that I'm working with in the social services. He'd never planted anything before, so that was quite cool. And so when Rongo Matane is the god of cultivated foods, Hongia Tiki Tiki is the god of uncultivated food. So for example, if you're up in the forest picking berries, you're in the domain of Hongia Tiki Tiki. Ruaimoko is the god of, you're right, Ruaimoko is the god of volcanoes. And yeah, that's it, I think. And we haven't missed anyone else, but the point I'm trying to raise to get across to you while I'm selling you that and why I did that haka in the first place, whānau, is that in any given time, in any given day and moment, we are at one and either in one or multiple of those elements at any one time. So, for example, when I do my weddings, or my weddings, our weddings, then when you're in that domain, then you're in the domain of Rongo Matane, the god of love. If you're in doing taiaha or martial arts, then you're in the domain of tumatowing, as an example. If you're going out fishing, you're in the domain of, when you go out fishing, you're in the domain of Tangaro, the god of the sea. If you're up in the forest and you're hunting, then you're in the domain of Tāne Mahuta. And the point I'm trying to make is, if you have a belief system that, or a consciousness, not a belief system, a consciousness that when you choose to live your life like that, you really have a connection to those natural elements, it changes the way that you think for yourself, but it also changes the way that you operate in the world. And this whole talk, I guess, not this just this talk, but my life is really revolves around having that connection to those natural elements, but also to honoring the wishes of our ancestors that have gone before us that were part of those elements as well. So that was kind of what I was sort of going to physically show you outside, but I've just explained it just for you now. So yeah, so that's kind of where we're at with it, really, in terms of my kōrero. I mean, I could go on for ages and I'm probably disrupted, but I've been raving on enough anyway now. So I don't know, Miriam, if you want to ask questions or anything like that, I'll just do my very best to answer.
Yeah, lovely. I would just maybe, I mean, thank you very much. It's been for you taking us into your home like this, as well as taking us outside. So experiencing and witnessing that connection to the outer space. Yeah. Really supported what you've just said. So you've got those important connections through the natural world, as well as your ancestry or mythology, or however, you know, you look at those, putting it together, not just in your home and in that space, but also in your work. I'm understanding that you're passing this on to the work with the young men as well, yeah?
You're yeah, definitely. I'll,
you implement know, that's, that into the working with them.
Yeah, of course, because you know, I don't really like using this word too much, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're led to a place like jail, you're basically living in a bit of a disempowered life. And the young guys, I mean, we are what we see when we're born and when we're raised. And so they haven't really got a choice around what they've been exposed to too much. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really just around, if I look at our work that we do, it's really just around connecting those that are disconnected. And so this is exactly what I meant. You know, this is doing these sorts of exercises, talking about the philosophy of what I've just talked to you about with haka and things like that. The young guy I'm working with now, his dad is Māori, never been to a marae before, knows nothing about himself. So I've been taking him to those, and really interesting to see him changing his view and feeling better about who he is as a young man simply by being there. So Yes, it's a huge, it's, I'm going to say tool, but it's not a tool. It's actually part, it's identity and lifestyle, and it's all about just finding motivation to walk on our true path, whatever that path looks like, you know?
Yeah. Well, I love how you mentioned previously that when you were connecting or searching for your self-identity, so you were on the journey, and what happened afterwards where you connected with deep yourself, your more, maybe your more authentic self, how you grew taller.
Mm.
You said how you maybe, you know, held yourself taller. And I love how the transition happened physically as well in you, you know? And from what you're saying, that physicality, it's a martial art or the movement you're bringing in, how important all that is part of that creation of yourself in a way, that self-identity. So it's the heart, it's here, but it's all that movement as well, to bringing it all together, to be part of yourself, really. So, and that's been very, very, very visible to experience that, I see that how important that is, a part of the journey as well in your community.
Mm. Yeah, no, kia ora. Thank you for that, Miriam. And, you know, you're right, there's that, but also at the same time, when we talk about the marriage work and even funerals, you know, that's those, it's exactly the same in that space, you know, like when I talk to my clients who basically become my friends straight away about the wedding ceremony, I say to them, you know, my role here is for those, your friends and family, to feel the love that already exists between you two. So if we talk about that connection to those spiritual worlds, it's about Rongo, the God of love and peace. So my role is to facilitate it through my words and my actions and telling their love story, that those that are there in that venue at the wedding can see it and feel it in their hearts. So that's exactly the same as what the martial art of swinging the taiaha around or paddling out on the ocean or hunting up in the bush. To me, it's exactly the same. It's just a connection to a different realm. But those, like I said earlier, those realms in any time, given time, in any given day, we're in at least one of those rounds or a multiple rounds. And like I said, like there's one message, I suppose, like I said already, it's to invite you to choose to view and live your world in that way. Because for me personally, I can only talk about myself, but for me personally, it's just made my life so much more richer. And that's going back to what I said before, you know, save my life, whatever that word means, you know.
Yeah, no, that is fantastic. Thank you very much. I think I'm going to touch very quickly on one or two questions.
Yep.
We do have a question here from Leoma asking, are there different movements for women when they are connected?
Yeah,
they are.
Yeah. There are different connections. There are different movements for women. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Because, I mean, I'm not going to go into too much of the specifics, but absolutely, because again, it's male have roles and female have roles. So it's not just about the roles, but it's also about in the space you're talking about. If we look at example in Kapa Haka, which is that sort of dancing, not dancing, but the way we move, you have masculine and then you have feminine. And so it's about marrying those two together in a way that honors both. So yeah, they are different. Same, but different, if you know what I mean.
Yes, absolutely. Beautiful. Yeah. And I'm going to do one more question and then we will be getting to towards the end of it. do Maori people believe in reincarnation?
That
was earlier on. I didn't want to jump in, but I thought I'll leave it to towards the end.
Again, you know, this, I can only speak for myself, right?
Yeah.
And there'll be others that may have a different view. But in that, if I'm listening to that question and I hear that word reincarnation, in terms of the context, because I understand reincarnation to be, okay, I'm here now, but then I'll come back as something or someone else. Now, my personal view is that the answer to that question simply is no, not in that way, shape or form. However, it's about returning to the place where all our ancestors, ko haere ki te arai, ki te pō. So going through that veil between this physical world that we live in and the live and the ones that have passed over into another world. So I'm going to say no to that. Yeah, I'm going to say no to that. But then again, others might view it slightly differently. But for me, it's not about leaving this world and then coming back as something else. But it is about leaving this world to a common place that we all share. And for example, one of the things that I got told when I was younger was that when we pass, we go up and we become a star in the sky. Mm-hmm. And so every time we look up at the stars in the sky, so a star is an ancestor. So when we're looking up at that night on those beautiful starry nights, those are all our tupuna up there. Yeah. So does that kind of answer the question around not coming back as being reincarnated?
No. I think that's great. What I would like to say is we can sort of wrap it up. This has been very enriching experience for me, to be honest. I would personally like to know if there's any way we can find a little bit more about your work. Are you someone connected through any social media, website, or anything else, if people would like to know a little bit more about yourself and your work?
Yeah, look, I think I have to say no. I'm not terribly. I kind of did when I was doing all my corporate stuff. I was right into it, but now I've been in the social services for the last couple of years,
yeah,
and I really kind of fallen off that a little bit. I think so. At the moment, I'd only say that my Facebook page, Te Arohi Ellis Briers, is probably a way of contacting me, and then going from there, I guess.
Lovely. We will put it for those if you're interested in connecting a little bit more. We will put it on the portal space, yeah, so that they can find you. So yeah.
Just to cut you off, just remember that, like, I've done a TED talk if anybody wants to watch that. That's under my Pākehā name, Ellis, Ellis, Briers. But there's a TED talk they can watch. I have got a website, but I think it's down at the moment. But that's ellisbriers.com.
Yeah, lovely.
And the name of the talk is Our Kiwi Tanga, Kiwitanga, okay. Our Kiwi Tanga, where to from here, basically. Word I made up, which means our cultural identity.
Lovely. We will put that in the notes as well. Lovely. So before I give you the final word, I would like to tell everyone thank you very much for attending. This has been really enriching experience for me, and I really want to say that the conference is full on. It's full on experience. There's so much to see and hear. And if you feel like, oh, that's overwhelming, and so you really do have an opportunity to actually purchase and support a whole conference, the whole team who works behind. Mm-hmm. So upgrade yourself a little bit more, so you'll be able to digest and dive into different channels and different speakers and your own pace. So you're gonna be in charge of your own time, of listening to everyone who's just contributed to this beautiful virtual space. Mm-hmm. So there's also a coffee break room available on Embodiment Portal, as well as Face Group. If you would like to reflect a little bit more on what we just experienced from Te Arohi from New Zealand, so if there's something you like to share amongst yourself, you can go to Embodiment Portal coffee room, or you can go directly, or you can carry on still on a Facebook page. So thank you very much for all those who attended, and you to Ahari, you got really lovely support from those who attended. They have been very nicely connected to what you said. And I would like to invite you, what would you be your final or top embodiment tip? Tip on embodiment for those who just...
I think first and foremost, to try and be at peace with yourself as best you can, no matter what's going on in the world around you. I think secondly, to the invitation that I extended today, which is to walk in consciousness connection with the world around you. Mm-hmm. And also going back to the whakapapa, or the history, take your time to research about your ancestors, because they're here with you. And so I encourage that as well. Miriam, I acknowledge your team for putting the conference together. We're all on a path. We're all at different stages. And I just think...
Hello? Well, so we can't hear you. We can't hear you, but we hope that those... we can't hear you, but we hope... Hello? Hello? So we couldn't hear your last words. We hope they will somehow reach us. We've lost the sound for whatever reason. So thank you very much anyway for your presence and for what you've shared with us. You let us in into your community and your private space. So thanks once again. It's been great. And if there's anything else, just drop us a line or get in touch with Tom, the channel manager. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Thanks.